Hi, welcome to the Landing Spot Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Noe. This show exists to trample all over the idea that feeling exhausted and terrible is just part of being a woman or an aging woman. I am a certified women's health coach seeking to provide women of all ages a safe spot to land as they learn how to truly restore hormone and metabolic health. I will interview leading experts in the field, as well as women who have personally overcome things like stubborn weight gain, exhaustion, irregular cycles, infertility, brain fog, and so much more. It is your time to move from surviving to thriving. Enjoy the show. Hey, thank you so much for joining the show today. I know you're going to get a ton of great information that our guest is giving you. But before we get started, if you are a woman who is suffering from chronic fatigue, terrible sleep, weight gain, skin issues, irregular cycles, anxiety, depression, all of the things that come with hormone and metabolic dysfunction, I would love to see if I can help you. Reach out to me on Instagram, send me a DM, and let's schedule a call to see if I'm the right professional to get you back to where you want to be. And that is thriving. Ladies, we are not meant to be barely hanging on, no matter what age we are. We are truly created and designed to thrive. I want to help you through some simple lifestyle interventions achieve that. If I'm not the right person for you, I have a ton of connections in this field all over the US. And I would love to connect you with one of those so that you can truly live your best life. Reach out. It's at Allison Health Coach Noe on Instagram. We'll include that in the show notes. And now y'all enjoy the show. Hey, and welcome back to the Landing Spot Podcast. We are so excited to have Dr. Catherine Mooring back with us today. We got well into the female hormonal cycle last time and got so deep into it that we had to cut it in half. I think the more information on this stuff, the better. And we cover a ton of ground, everything from, you know, what's going on with your body, physiologically, hormonally, and how to exercise, how to eat, how to fast, why you're experiencing certain symptoms. So I think it's just powerful information. And so Catherine, one of the things that I am starting to do now is I want to give the listeners a good takeaway right off the bat. And since we're talking about the later weeks in the cycle, and we're going to be talking about that week before our period, which can kind of be a bummer sometimes, what is at least one natural remedy or way to decrease the annoying symptoms of that PMS?
Yeah, PMS can be hard. And just thinking about the tendency of the luteal phase, which we'll get into today, can be a little unpredictable, like fall weather. And you may even find, kind of relating back to the seasons, is the luteal sort of like fall. And you may even find that some months you have it worse than others. Often this, you know, exacerbation of PMS symptoms can be hormonal. It can be nutrient related. So you can do some things like micronutrient testing, hormonal testing, just to make sure there aren't definite nutrient or hormone stuff going on. Outside of that, I think it's just important to really lean into where you are in your cycle and just recognizing that, you know, from a human evolution standpoint, let's say, you know, it's kind of normal for us not to want to be around people during that phase of our cycle, because there could be a potential pregnancy, and the subconscious nature of us is like trying to protect that potential pregnancy. And we may not want to be around other animals or people that could hurt us or hurt the baby or upset us. And so just kind of giving yourself grace for that and understanding that if you're in that phase and you're not feeling like being around a lot of people, then trying to arrange your schedule as best you can for that, you know, not the best time to commit to big plans and big things. And then nutritionally speaking, just knowing too, like if you've set yourself up from the month before, from day one of your cycle, really leaning into that menstrual phase, resting, turning inward, allowing that much needed rest and rejuvenation, you know, taking advantage of that follicular phase where we likely feel better into ovulation, that the more we can really lean into and give our bodies what they need during each phase, the better that luteal phase can be and the less the PMS symptoms could come. And then there's always certain supplementations you can look at adding in. And, you know, I don't want to just give recommendations here because I think that can be harmful or more problematic for people, but would really just encourage you, if you are someone who is experiencing more than just normal PMS, a little bit of, you know, some off days, that you really try to get to the root of what may be going on hormonally or nutritionally, and working with the practitioner like either one of us or other experts in the field that can really do that level of testing and also make sure you're getting to the root of what may be driving it.
But yeah,
just off the bat, you know, sunshine, movement, exercise, the right nutrition can really be paramount, because when we're putting in things that are disrupting the microbial makeup of the gut or the gut lining, or just naturally making us not feel great because of the impact on blood sugar or what have you, then this is naturally going to exacerbate these symptoms and make us feel worse.
Yep. So yeah, just to kind of summarize that, it never really stops. So taking care of your body all the time is going to help reduce the severity of PMS symptoms. Blood sugar regulation is huge. And then something else that, again, we don't want to just give a generic solution to a problem, but what are your thoughts on those that are prone to hormonal migraines? So a lot of women get migraines right before they start their period. Increasing magnesium. Have you seen benefits with this?
I have seen benefits with that. And I think increasing magnesium, I mean, magnesium is paramount for so many things in the body. And it is part of so many processes and so many transactions and whatever else is going on in the body. And there are 9 different kinds of magnesium. So I think getting a really high quality supplement that either offers like something like Bioptimizers that offers a lot of those different kinds, or really dialing in on what can be the most beneficial source for you, can be really helpful. But magnesium is great. And anything the body doesn't use, you're going to excrete. So it really can't get to be a dangerous thing at all.
Yeah. And like you said, we use it for, I think now it's close to 500 biological processes, everything from digestion to cognition to sleep,
stress, yeah, anxiety. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. And it's also something that it's hard to detect a deficiency. Like even if you were to get a micronutrient panel done in the bloodstream, the body tries to keep pretty normal levels in the blood. So you may have a deficiency, but it may not show up in the bloodstream. So it can be hard to measure if you actually have good levels of it or not. But yeah, magnesium can be helpful. Something like ashwagandha, you know, some of those more natural herbs can be helpful for mood stabilization. But yeah.
Yeah, that's
sunshine is one of the best things. Just getting out and getting that morning sunshine especially can really help everything.
It's a game changer. And I noticed too, I love to sit outside in the mornings and, you know, just have my quiet time and get that morning sun exposure. But if I go for a walk, I actually feel even better. So the movement, the blood flow combined with that sunshine really helps me too. So,
for sure.
Okay. So speaking of movement and blood flow, those are two things that are going to be super beneficial for these latter weeks of our hormonal cycle. So let's dive in. Let's start with that week 3 or that third phase rather. So we want to go over all the good stuff. So
week 3 is, or not really week 3, but phase 3 is the third part of our menstrual cycle. And so just kind of remembering phase 1 being menstruation. Most women bleed somewhere between 4 and 7 days. Phase 2 being follicular, which is where the body's getting ready to make the egg, build the uterine lining, and getting ready to ovulate. So ovulation happens really anywhere from like day 14 to 20-ish. It's really tough to say days because everybody has different cycle lengths. But depending on your cycle, whether you're a 28 to 34 day cycle, it would be somewhere in that range. And ovulation is when the egg is actually released from the ovary and it begins to travel down the fallopian tube. So similar to weeks 2 of follicular, the same kind of stuff is going on hormonally in terms of estrogen is at its peak, progesterone starts to come into the picture. And so during ovulation, you still likely feel just like you did in the follicular phase, where the mood is, most women really feel good during follicular and ovulation. Some women, however, do get crampy or pain or some issues with ovulation. And again, I think that's really important to dig into what's going on there hormonally. So I again say, like, all of this is just, you know, talking, generally speaking, that this is what's happening. And so with ovulation, it's important to understand that this is a time where you'll feel most likely similar to that follicular phase, where you just really feel good, lots of energy. And this is really the whole purpose of our entire cycle. And it's also really important for our endocrine function, which is another reason why hormonal birth control can be problematic. Because if you're on hormonal birth control, you're not ovulating and your body just is constantly thinking it's pregnant due to the artificial progesterone and estrogen that you're consuming. And so because of its impact on ovulation, it can be pretty detrimental to endocrine function and lots of other functions in the body. And so again, I encourage you, I understand it's super important not to have an unwanted pregnancy. However, nowadays, there are just really so many other forms of fertility awareness methods that I always encourage women to look into. So ovulation lasts about a day, and the egg can survive inside of our bodies for about 24 hours. If it's not fertilized by the sperm, then we don't become pregnant, and then the egg will die. And then this is when, over the course of about 10 to 14 days, once we start to menstruate again, the uterine lining begins to shed, and that's when we experience the bleeding. So again, estrogen is at its peak, and just before ovulation, the brain sends luteinizing hormone to signal the egg to release. And then following the release of the egg is when estrogen comes into the picture. So both estrogen and progesterone are beginning to come into the picture, which is like making us feel so good, usually because these hormones both have such beneficial effects when they're in their right ratio. Like obviously estrogen is too much of one or the other is a problem, but when they're like perfectly firing, so to speak, this can be really good, making us really laser focused and calm yet energetic, if that makes sense. So, and then post ovulation, progesterone starts to become the dominant hormone and it's warming. And so therefore this is why we see about a day, you know, 24 hours after, like if you use a basal thermometer to check your basal temperature in the mornings, the day you ovulate, the next day you'll see a bump in temperature about anywhere from half to a degree even higher. And this increase in this warming nature of progesterone increases temperature, which then increases metabolism, which we'll talk about in phase four. So some considerations during this phase, similar to follicular, energy is high, mood stable, sex is going to feel better. You're usually kind of looking for a mate, so to speak, or like your libido is higher. Confidence is higher, more likely to feel social, good time to have important meetings, make big decisions, et cetera. Really just dig in and try to get stuff done. And I always think about this, like when I'm in this like follicular into ovulation phase, to like try to intentionally take advantage of that and tune into, do I feel good or do I not feel good? And again, depending on how well you've set yourself up during phase one and phase two, and even into phase three, is going to dictate how good you feel within each phase thereafter. It kind of can depend anywhere from day 14 to 20. And during this ovulation time, we're obviously very fertile. And then again, we're fertile too for 5 days, 5 to 7 days-ish leading up to this the actual ovulation. So again, if you experience a longer cycle than that, then you know that ovulation was likely delayed due to stress or some perceived threat. And again, if the body perceives stress, then it's going to delay ovulation. And sometimes like you just have a delayed ovulation because like just personally speaking, my cycles really range from like 30 to 34 days with really no rhyme or reason. And so, that means my follicular phase really changes depending on the month without, I really can't figure out what it is. So some people just have variability in this for really no reason. Other people can kind of tell like, oh yeah, I've been really stressed lately and ovulation was delayed. And so just a couple other considerations, metabolically, after ovulation, our insulin sensitivity becomes lower, meaning that it's harder for the body to move sugar from the bloodstream into the cells. And insulin is going to come into the picture more intensely because it's needed to prepare for potential pregnancy. So we're getting into that fat storage mode. And as soon as the body ovulates, we're kind of on I can just kind of imagine the body internally, like, are we pregnant? Are we not pregnant? Are we pregnant? Are we not pregnant? And like for 2 weeks, it's trying to figure that out, or the better part of a week anyway. And after that first week, you can kind of, the body kind of knows it's not. And part of the other reason we get this PMS is because we have progesterone's plummeting. The body realizes it's not pregnant. It's really low. Estrogen's really low. And so this is another reason why, like that very tail end of luteal end of menstruation, we just don't feel good. You can feel just lethargic, tired, a little kind of low grade hangover some months. And again, it's just really important to just offer ourselves grace and lean into that. And in the perfect world, or back in the day, you could go on a little retreat with your girlfriends and, you know, go in a cave for a little while. I mean, that's kind of like a very simplistic explanation, but we just can't escape modern day like we used to could. And I think women need to understand that modern day is just like a blip on the radar in our, you know, evolution as a species. And so understanding that women really need to understand that, and the people that live with us, and for women to have conversations with their partners about this, like, hey, like, I really can't help this. You know, it's just an evolutionary part of who I am. And for us to offer ourselves that same grace and understanding that we may just not feel our best because we're operating with very minimal hormone support. Whereas ovulation, it's like they're both at their peak and we feel amazing. And then, you know, progesterone continues to rise a little bit through that luteal phase.
Yeah, that's so important, because we think that life has been this way forever. Our culture just ingrains in us that we are to go hard 24/7. It's that nonstop. And, you know, it's really a male-centric culture that we live in. And it's not, you know, I'm not going to get into feminism or anything like that. Yeah. It's just kind of the world we live in today. But if we look back in primitive times, and really not even that long ago, this isn't at all how it was. You know, I mean, women didn't work like we do now. And because a lot of women have to, we're not, you know, demonizing that. However, it's just understanding that's not the way it's been for very long at all. Yeah. And the reason is because our biology doesn't support it. When we're low in those hormones, we just don't, I mean, those hormones give us a lot of energy and all that good stuff that men get every single night when they sleep. And we go, you know, days or weeks at a time without it. So yeah, I'm so glad you pointed that out, because it's really hard for, I see so many of my friends who, they love to push themselves 24/7 and they are just exhausted, and it catches up with us real quick. And we just think this is the way it's supposed to be. And biologically speaking, no, it's not.
No. And even things like fasting's a great tool, but it's not necessarily great for every day for all the time, you know, and it can lead to some hormonal imbalance, or getting burned out leads to hormonal imbalance. And you're exactly right. And I think as women, it's important to lean into that and understand that, especially with yourself. Like, I like to work out, but I don't usually work out that hard when I'm active, you know, when I'm in that menstrual phase. I'll go for longer walks. I might do some gentle yoga, but I'm not trying to push it in the gym because I know I don't feel good. It doesn't feel good to me. And it's just not the time that your body really needs that. And especially for women who are trying to conceive, it's really important to lean into these phases to have optimal, optimal follicular leading up to ovulation and ovulation, because that's going to impact the health of the pregnancy and the baby. And whether or not you experience various things during pregnancy, I mean, obviously everybody's so different. There's so much that goes into that, but these things are just all really important to understand. And if you have any control whatsoever over it, like I like when, like if I'm like day one of my cycle falls on a weekend, it's nice because I don't have to go to work, you know, and I don't have to show up and be present and be people-y. It can be helpful. Or no, like, you know, hey, I'm just going to take today off. I'm just going to turn inward and spend some time by myself. And not everybody has that capability, but some people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially as more people move to like entrepreneurs and things of that nature. But yeah, I mean, it's all very real. And this is another reason, like, estrogen does so much for us in the right amount, not too much, not too little. And why kind of going through menopause kind of has this like bad reputation of women going crazy. And estrogen just begins to plummet after menopause. And so it's this adjustment that we're making physically and emotionally as women, as we go through that change. But the more that you can lean into that, eat the right foods, move the right amount, you know, supplement with sunshine and other lifestyle shifts, the better that experience can be. And I think too often our medical field, I see this all the time with clients like, oh, just get on birth control. Oh, just, you know, get on hormones. And it's like, yeah, that's okay for some people, but that shouldn't be our first. Like, let's try other things first and then let's come to that. And I think just with anything, like our world is kind of looking for a quick fix. And some of this stuff takes time. Like we didn't just start feeling bad instantly. So it's important to really think about offering yourself the patience and the grace that comes with progress takes time, and to be patient with ourselves as we heal through most of this. And for anyone who's been on birth control, myself included, it takes, you know, even if you didn't have like noticeable stuff like endometriosis or whatever, your body is still healing from the effects of it for a while. And I think some of us just expect to just come off and get pregnant or come off and be fine. And there are some things that we can do nutritionally as well to help the body heal from the negative impacts of birth control. So, yeah, probably not. I don't know how much you want to get into that today, but it's just given out like candy to women without an explanation of the potential side effects of it, or given for acne to teenagers who, let's just look at the diet for a baby. That's why they have acne, or just a lot of other stuff we can look at.
It's a conversation that I'm so grateful that I've been able to have with moms, because I have some younger clients and their moms are really invested in, because they're helping them cook their meals and all of this. And they're so glad that they are learning this stuff, because it is given out like candy just about every time that a female hits, you know, they start their period, and then it's any little problem, birth control
cramps?
Is the answer.
Oh, you have your, it's too heavy. Like, well, let's figure out why it's heavy. Why they have cramps? Why is the estrogen dominant?
Because our ability to ovulate is our fifth vital sign, meaning it is very important to our health. Biologically speaking, being able to have a baby is what we're here for, you know, looking at biology. So don't get upset with me that I said that, but so if for some reason that process is shut down, it starts to affect all sorts of systems in our bodies that, and I mean, the women that I meet in their early 20s, they're falling apart. Their anxiety is so bad. They can't sleep. They're, you know, obese. And you look at their history of birth control at 12, 13 years old. Well, it's starting to become kind of apparent what's going on. So we can do a whole episode on that, because I think it's important. I think it's important that it's being talked about, for sure.
And it's important for women, especially, to understand that there are things that drive ill health in the body because of how they impact the gut and the permeability of the gut lining and the health of the gut. And birth control is one of those things that exacerbates gut permeability, and it depressants and antipsychotics exacerbate gut permeability. And so when you're on antidepressants and birth control and probably antibiotics, you know, you've recently been on antibiotics, just kind of this, you know, quadruple whammy to the gut, which then impacts a cycle, your cycle health and everything, your emotional and mental health and everything else. So go ahead.
Oh yeah. I want to take a little sideways route real quick. Will you define or explain gut permeability for the listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So the lining of our gut is kind of like cheesecloth, and it's got the epithelial cells are connected by tight junctions, and these tight junctions regulate the permeability of the gut, meaning that they basically regulate if anything can pass through it from, so that stuff can leave the gut and get into the bloodstream or vice versa. And normally these tight junctions are held very tightly where nothing is able to pass through them unless the body says, okay, go through. So it's kind of like cheesecloth. It allows some things to pass through and other things to not pass through. But when the gut lining becomes permeable, whether it's through stress, things like glyphosate, antibiotics, birth control, other prescription medications, NSAIDs, you know, I had a client recently who was telling me, you know, about, you know, just chronic NSAID use, and which is non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen and Tylenol, on birth control, you know, on antidepressants. And it's just like, that just exacerbates this gut permeability, and then stress. So basically what happens is, quite literally, there's damage in the gut lining and these tight junctions become damaged, and they allow things to leave the gut and get into the bloodstream, primarily things like bacterial waste products. So the bacteria in our gut is, there's lots of species, like thousands of species in the gut, but some of it's gram negative, and gram negative bacteria have a coating called lipopolysaccharide. It's basically lipid and sugar that covers a lipid and a protein that covers their structure to protect them from being digested by stomach acid and bile. And so it's both protective and structural. And it, when it's in the gut, it's fine. But when the gut becomes permeable and these bacterial endotoxins or lipopolysaccharides are able to be translocated from the gut into the bloodstream, it just creates massive immune system reactions. And the immune system then begins to react because all of a sudden there's these foreign particles in the bloodstream. And this drives things like even a lot of autoimmune stuff, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, dementia. We see in the brains of Alzheimer's patients, even children with ADD, ADHD, these elevated levels of lipopolysaccharide or LPS in the bloodstream. And so we know if they're in the bloodstream that there's leaky gut, meaning, because that's the only way that these lipopolysaccharides or LPS would enter the gut is through leaky gut or gut permeability. And so that's kind of part of it. But you know, the gut is intended to be damaged in a sense, like it's got cellular turnover every 3 to 5 days. So it's kind of like just part of being human, we're going to be exposed to pathogens and there's going to be damage to the gut and it can heal itself. But when it's every day, day in, day out, constantly taking a birth control pill every day, taking an antidepressant every day, taking NSAIDs every day, being super stressed, eating inflammatory foods, it's kind of like this total load, you know. And I get like, there's some people need these things, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them. I'm just saying it's important to understand the big picture. And we're just not told that when we're sitting in our doctor's office and they're like, and I was this way, you know, when I was in graduate school in my mid 20s, I had insomnia, I had ADHD or ADD, I had brain fog, I had sinus infections, I had anxiety. I was on medication for like 5 things. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I still felt like crap. And I still didn't feel good. And then I really realized like the power of food and lifestyle shifts. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, looking back, like, God, I wish I could know what I know then, what I know now, but yeah. I just want to help empower other people to know, yeah, like, and spread this news around. We really don't have to be so reliant on big pharma, and we really can take power into our own hands and really get to the root of our health issues. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of unlearning, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything, but often what we're told around food is just not true. Mm-hmm. And particularly when it comes to dietary guidelines, and the dietary guidelines, even if they were the best ever, the fact that we think we can give guidelines for an entire population of people that are very different in the microbial makeup of the gut, health histories, gender, age, sex, et cetera, to think that we all need the same diet is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like if you and I both had 10 clients in front of us, they would all need different things and have different sensitivities and different stuff just based on their history or their food allergies or their food sensitivities. And so it's just kind of frustrating that, like, I hear clients all the time, like, I thought plant-based was good. I thought I should be putting raw kale in my smoothie every day. Or I thought, and it's just like, yeah, that's, maybe that's good for some people, but that's not good for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's important to understand. Fat's another thing. Like, I was eating low fat for decades, just having no idea that it was actually so important for us as women, especially, that we have enough dietary fat and to not fear fat. And that's a big piece of this picture, you know, especially with hormonal health.
Yes.
Like, kind of coming back to the cycle. Like, if you're not eating enough dietary fat, you know, or you're under, you don't have enough body fat or too much body fat, the body's not going to, the cycle's not going to be regular. Mm-hmm. Our ovaries are very sensitive to how much body fat is available at any given time. And the dietary fat plays a role in energy metabolism. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, it's actually carbohydrates that make us fat, not dietary fat. Mm-hmm. So,
because of the insulin response, which is a, yes, growth factor, with fat storing hormone. Yeah. 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 But all to wrap that up, when you hear things like RA or even some of these degenerative disease, you know, these scary words that sound super permanent, actually, if we look at what's causing it, if it is a mechanism of or a result of leaky gut, that means that we can look at fixing it, not just masking, yes, it with medicine.
Yes.
You, right. I know people personally and professionally who have healed from things that their doctor said they would never heal from. Yeah. And then it
even
would just
like MS, multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. I mean, it is, the body has an incredible innate ability to heal itself, mm-hmm, with the right inputs and information. And yes, sometimes it takes more than food and working with like a naturopath or somebody who's really, you know, well-versed in herbs and natural remedies and things can be really helpful. Even like I live in the middle of nowhere, so I don't have access to these kind of things. But like, if you're in a bigger city, doing things like trauma work, you know, Reiki, acupuncture, like really important body work, like all of that can be so important to the big picture of healing your body, both energetically and physically and emotionally, because it's all related. Mm-hmm. And I talk to clients about this a lot, like trauma you know, any kind of trauma in our life will manifest as emotional stuff or challenges mm-hmm. with your cycle. And if you don't heal that, it's going to continue to live there underneath subconsciously in your body. So yeah, it's all related, but we can heal. And within a week of changing your diet, you'll see improvements in gut stuff and
massive
anxiety and depression and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was good. That I think that that's really important that we, kind of cover a full picture here. Okay. So before I interrupted you, cause I got excited about something you said. So where are we at?
Luteal. So phase yes. four is luteal. And this phase is after ovulation and we come into luteal. It's the longest phase of the cycle. It's anywhere from 10 to 14. Actually, it's anywhere from like 10 to 17 days. Most women begin to menstruate roughly 12 to 14 days after ovulation. So basically it's this time between ovulation and menstruation where the body's trying to figure out, am I pregnant? Am I not pregnant? So during this phase, there is a chance for pregnancy. And as I mentioned, this PMS can be a little bit of that just kind of protective mechanism. Low libido is kind of common as well during the middle latter end of this phase. Again, just because you're protecting potential pregnancy. And mama bears kind of feel that urge to protect this potential pregnancy, even subconsciously. Like if you know there's no way you're pregnant, if you're using fertility awareness or whatever, then you still kind of have this subconscious feeling here. So hormonally speaking, progesterone is the dominant hormone post-ovulation. Again, it's warming. And so it increases metabolism. And with that increase in metabolism, you may feel more hungry. And this kind of makes sense too, because you know, you are potentially preparing for a pregnancy where you're going to need more calories. Your body's really trying to get in more nutrients. And this increased metabolism is also associated with that increased, you know, hunger. The other thing that happens is that, I'll come back to that metabolic consideration. So just kind of quick food and fasting considerations, we're likely going to feel more hungry, may experience some heavier cravings. So if you feel like fasting during this phase, you can. So 14 to 16 hours may feel good. It may not. I find that during the like really early luteal phase of mine, I typically have more appetite. And then that second week, I don't. So kind of getting closer to menstruation or when I feel better fasting for longer periods of time and are not worried about negatively impacting ovulation or anything like that. So maybe a 16 to 18, just depending on how you feel. However, timing of fasting can be important too. So a lot of women especially find that while it's socially maybe easier to fast in the morning and then eat supper, it actually can be better to eat breakfast or eat something earlier in the morning and then stop eating, you know, mm-hmm. earlier in the day, like 3 or 4, let's say. But again, socially, that's a little more challenging for a lot of people, but we really can benefit if you can sometimes do the fast on the latter part of the day, the end of the day. It's going to improve just sleep and insulin metabolism and whatnot, because we just naturally become more insulin resistant in the evening, which kind of makes sense because the body's gearing up for sleep. It really doesn't want to be metabolizing a really big meal. So one of the best changes I'll tell clients is too, like a lot of times they'll come to me and we'll start working together and they eat a really big meal at like 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or even later. And just that one change alone of trying to shift that meal earlier and making it smaller, it does wonders for health. And so thinking about this in this phase can be helpful as well. 10 to 15% more calories, it's kind of negligible, but 100, 200 more calories a day during this phase, maybe kind of, you know, subconsciously you might even increase calories, but I always try to tell women too, like, don't obsess over the calories or the macros, but really pay more attention to the ingredients and trying to eat foods with less ingredients. And then that will naturally keep you more full and more satiated than foods that are processed and refined. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, important here too. So part of the metabolic consideration is that we're more insulin resistant. This means that the body is less efficient at moving sugar from the cell into from the bloodstream into our cells. And because of this reduced insulin sensitivity, less carbs are better. Because if we were to eat the same meal during this luteal phase that we did earlier in the cycle, blood sugar is going to rise higher or rise more and stay up longer, most likely because of this insulin resistance. And the two times in our life we're naturally more insulin resistant are during pregnancy and puberty, because these are times associated with growth and insulin is that building, storing anabolic hormone. So thinking about that, Less carbohydrate and focusing more on quality protein and fat can be helpful here. So if women are interested in like a ketogenic state or the ketogenic diet, this can be a really great phase to do it in, is this luteal phase, because we just naturally don't need as much carbohydrate and we benefit from less carbohydrate. So that's kind of important to understand too. And I'll just kind of say too, there, like, I hate that keto's become so trendy and it kind of gets a bad rap or a bad reputation for a lot of people, but the therapeutic benefits of the ketogenic diet are quite remarkable, and the therapeutic benefit of the body being exposed to ketones. In fact, I was listening to a podcast recently by Dr. Natasha Campbell, who's world renowned for creating the GAPS diet, which 20 years ago, she put together the fact that the gut and the brain are connected, and there's tremendous impact on our psychological health based on our gut health. But she talked about how the lower part of the gut and the brain actually benefit from ketone exposure and ketones for energy. But most people in America never have ketone production because we just eat way too much carbohydrate. And so when you're thinking about this luteal phase, it's naturally going to be more beneficial to have less carbs during this phase. And when we do that and really lean into that with like a clean, lower carbohydrate, or even a, you know, moving toward that ketogenic realm, or even not, like if it's more low carb with a little bit of fasting, you're going to start to get some of that low grade ketone production, which is phenomenally healthy for the gut, especially the lower part of the gut and the brain, which is so contrary again to what we hear, like, oh, the brain needs sugar for fuel. Yes, the brain does need glucose for fuel, but the brain also really benefits from ketones for fuel. And whether it actually needs sugar or not is still up for debate. You know, I don't know. I think research is still showing, you know, we're really not sure on that, but I do know for sure that we see tremendous benefit with that ketone production. And so this is the part of our fate, our cycle, where it's a good time to try to experiment with it, because we just don't need as much carbohydrate when we're in this phase of insulin resistance, especially women who are dealing with metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, any kind of diet, you know, pre-diabetes, diabetes, insulin resistance, et cetera. Because they're already are in a state of estrogen dominance. These women are already in an insulin resistant phase, most likely. Mm-hmm. And something else that I would just encourage women to do is, if you are struggling with weight loss or struggling with high blood pressure or anything, next time you go to your doctor, ask your doctor to run a fasting insulin, because we don't focus nearly enough on insulin. In fact, I had a client recently who, her blood sugar was phenomenal. Her A1C was like 4.8, but had a lot of symptoms of PCOS like stuff. And so I just asked her, I said, you know, next time you go to the doctor, have them run a fasting insulin. And they did, and it was like 15. And so again, fasting insulin should be ideally under one, but anywhere between 3 and 8. And we know 15 is high. So this is someone whose pancreas is, you know, all-star, pumping out plenty of insulin to keep blood sugar regulated, but in her mid 20s already having this level of insulin resistance. And so it was just, you know, again, information to say, hey, like, we've got to cut down on these processed refined carbohydrates, focus on vegetables, you know, animal-based protein, some fruits, but really getting away from the Cokes and the Dr. Peppers and the honey buns and things like that can be really helpful. And especially during this phase. So I'll tell people too, like, and even myself, like, you know, I really like to make things like gluten-free banana nut muffins and things like that, that are just naturally higher carb, but I save those for earlier in the cycle when I know my body can handle that carbohydrate load better than other phases. And so kind of moving on right along in this phase, again, if you're not feeling a fast, this is not the time to white knuckle through it, because your appetite's probably going to be a little higher. Exercise consideration. So kind of anything goes here, kind of like follicular, but we are not as much. So in that first couple of weeks, we're in more of a muscle building phase. This shifts a little here. Moderate weightlifting, any type of cardio should feel good. Just really whatever feels good as we prepare to enter back into phase one as well. Not being afraid though, if you don't feel like it, if you don't feel great, to do a more gentle day in the gym or even just a walk. And again, so kind of thinking about other considerations here, because the body's trying to decide if it's pregnant or not, you may find that your tolerance for alcohol is lower. So whereas during phase 1, 2, 3, you might can have a glass or two of wine, during this phase, you might feel nauseated after that, just because your body's trying to rid out any toxin to protect a potential pregnancy. Again, fat storage is increased as the body is kind of looking at supporting pregnancy. And the body, as the, I think I already mentioned this, but toward the latter end, as the body realizes it's not pregnant, then our hormones just are like dropping. So you experience this major shift in hormones, which can contribute to some of that PMS as well. And then again, once we realize we're not pregnant, the body gears up to start shedding the uterine lining. And then once this happens, we start back over on day one, phase one. And so just really helping women understand, and I always say, like, I wish I'd have known this when I was 13 when I started menstruating, but really just honoring and embracing each phase, the considerations for each phase, your personal needs for each phase. And the more we really lean into that and provide our body what it needs, the better our cycle experience is going to be. And to just really embrace the female lived experience versus to dread it or hate it. You know, hey, like, hey, you know, this week of menstruation is an opportunity for my body to detox and shed this lining and get ready and gear up for a whole nother month of what's going to happen. Again, trying to be empathetic and kind with yourself. And just as we said earlier, like, if you are someone who is experiencing, which is so common now, but this is not normal to have super heavy, painful, irregular cycles. If this is you, you know, reach out to someone for help, whether it's a holistic minded doctor, practitioner, someone like us, a hormone specialist, to really help you get to the root of what's going on, can just be really, really helpful. And just understanding too, that during this luteal phase, during this whole process, during each phase, just to understand the body's different, the body's changing, blood sugar regularity is different, hormones are different, insulin sensitivity is different. And so again, like we talked about earlier, we are so different from men. Like men have a 24-hour hormonal metabolic cycle. We have a 28 to 34 day cycle, of which can change even month to month for women. And, and you know, even someone like myself, who I feel like I'm really well in tune with this, I really try to pay attention to it. Some months I'm like blown away. I'm like, what is happening? My back's hurting so bad, or, oh, my back didn't hurt at all this month, or gosh, I really feel horrible this week, like during menstruation, or, oh, like I'm so emotional, I'm crying. And it's like, sometimes you just don't know what happened. It's just part of being a woman, but really trying to say, like, you know what, this is a season, this is a day, this is a few days, and trying to offer yourself the things that, you know, feel good, whether it's a warm bath, candles, a long walk, asking somebody to keep your kids, or taking the day off from work, and just knowing that we've got to offer ourselves more grace when it comes to being women, and understanding too that, like, most of us wear a million hats, and just that alone can be really hard to, and we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and we put a lot of pressure on each other. Like, I think just to, like, just a shout out for other women, like, let's, like, support each other. Let's celebrate each other. Let's be kind to each other. Like, stop judging each other, because we're all living in this world and dealing with emotional shifts and whatever else is going on. And community is really important. And I think when you can find other like-minded women to share this experience with, the better. And also, like, women that are willing to talk about this kind of stuff with each other, and to be open with your spouse about it. Like, I know sometimes it can feel vulnerable, especially if you're in a new relationship or a new marriage or a new partnership. But really helping your partner understand yourself and your cycle can be really helpful for the relationship as well.
Something that I've seen a lot with clients is that they have been so frustrated because they have gone on a diet with their husbands, and their husbands drop like crazy and they're gaining weight. And so something that you said, and one of the main reasons that we want to educate women on what is going on and give you all of this information, is so that you understand it's not just that we have some extra estrogen or low testosterone sometimes. It's not just about sex hormones. You are more resistant to insulin. So metabolically speaking, during certain parts of your phase, you need to do a completely different plan than you do the other parts of your phase. And while that can feel overwhelming, working with someone who understands this and can help you implement that will definitely help. But just you having that understanding, your husband having that understanding, it makes such a difference in the way that you can attack life and health. And where you keep mentioning, we need to have grace for ourselves. I think that's the key, is just knowing, okay, this is, that no wonder there's so many different things going on. No wonder I haven't had success doing the mainstream diet that my husband just, you know, got shredded on. So,
yeah. And I think, like I was saying, like everybody's so individual, and really, like, I really love to see people do elimination protocols to really just like take out everything that could possibly be driving inflammation for, I don't know, 10, 20, ideally like 30 days, and then really methodically add things back to see, how do you feel physically? How do you feel emotionally? And when we really think about food, like our food system has changed so much in the last 50-100 years, but our environment, our body and our immune system really haven't. And as women, like thinking too, like when you really go back to a more ancestral diet, which is, you know, predominantly animal-based with a little bit of fruit maybe and vegetables and eggs and whatnot, it's pretty shocking how little food you need when you're eating really high quality, good protein and good fat, how much longer you stay full versus eating a lot of carbohydrates. Like you're eating cereal, a granola bar, a sandwich, you know, you really need to eat every few hours because you're truly hungry. Your blood sugar's crashing. When we're not eating just a ton of processed refined carbs, the bulk of the food that you need is less. And you realize you can really sustain on more. The fuel just goes longer. It's more efficient fuel. Mm-hmm. And I've really noticed that, like, even in the last few weeks of, I've been kind of experimenting a little bit with more of an animal-based approach. And I say this, like, I used to be a vegetarian. So I used to believe in, like, the plant-based was the best, because I thought that they were, you know, there was a lot of truth to that. And I do think that plant-based works well for some people, but I think the majority of people really thrive better with some animal-based protein, if not a pretty good amount of good quality animal-based protein. And ideally, like from small farms that are using regenerative agriculture. And there's just so much that goes into this. So I hesitate to even say anything, but it's been interesting for me to see, even over the last couple of weeks, how much less actual food I need to eat, because I'm truly so much more sustained and fulfilled on less, because you're not eating a lot of, even if it's like clean stuff, like, you know, plantain chips with avocado oil and salt, they're still processed and they're still hard to stop eating. Mm-hmm. Whereas like you can not really overdo it on a piece of steak or some sausage links, because it's just so filling. You're not going to sit there and eat 10 like you will a whole bag of chips.
Yeah. I've done some bouts of carnivore just because I'm using it with some of my clients to heal some gut issues and other things.
And autoimmune stuff.
Yes. But
and anxiety and depression.
It is. So I have done whole foods based diets, you know, very strictly for a certain amount of time. And I still always really looked forward to eating. And when I went strictly meat based or animal based, I could take it or leave it, really. I mean, it gave me the most true understanding of actual hunger and need nutritionally. It was brand new. And I thought I had kind of been there, done that. And so some of my clients that struggle with the emotional and mental relationship to food, it's something that could go either way, but it's something in the back of my mind that I'm thinking about for them, because for us to understand, to make that biological and mental connection, it just gives a perspective like no other. So anyway, that's, we could definitely do another episode on that, but it's been super interesting because, you know, I think that so many of us have some sort of emotional tie to food. It's just one of those coping mechanisms that we've always had. But when I did the animal based, it was like, I mean, I guess I'll eat dinner because I already had prepared it, but it was very interesting.
It was some, like, and there's a lot of truth to that. Like, you know, we use food as comfort. It gives us dopamine hits. It can be very addictive, and for sure. But the other thing about kind of, this is not a podcast on the microbiome, but the microbial makeup of our gut is directly dependent on the type of food we're eating. And it changes drastically, like, overnight. So if you start eating an animal-based diet or a carnivore-based diet, it's going to drastically change your gut microbes, and you're going to kill off those microbes that crave sugar, and you quite literally aren't going to crave it anymore. And I see that all the time. I used to coach people through I still do coach Whole 30, but we used to do large groups pre-COVID, and, we've probably had, you know, over 100 people now go through, and most all of them say it. I would say the majority say, like, wow, I couldn't believe by like week 2 or 3, you just really don't crave sugar anymore because mm-hmm. you're the microbes that love sugar. Now they scream like hell for like a week and it's mm-hmm. really hard to stop. But once you get past that, it's almost like quitting cigarettes, like just quitting it cold turkey and getting rid of the sugar. And you literally, those microbes perish and other microbes thrive and you quite literally crave different things. And it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. That's something that we talk a lot about in our program is we've got to starve out those little monsters that are sending signals to your brain to eat sugar because they want to be fed and they're not going to win this war anymore, you know?
Yeah. And also, so like, it's not you, it's your gut microbes.
Exactly.
They're literally driving our behavior. Yeah.
And we can't say this enough. I mean, from so many different angles, it really isn't us. It's not that we are just, for the most part, it's not that we are just a bunch of gluttonous, horrible individuals. We've been manipulated by the food system, and the pharmaceutical industry, and our biology is just responding to that. It's responding to the things that we don't know. And so the more understanding that we have, we can say, wait a minute, I actually have control over this. I can eliminate. I tell people all the time, when I gave up alcohol, my sugar cravings were insane because I didn't have the sugar from the alcohol anymore. And so I wanted sweets all the time. And I tell people, I thought I was going to meet Jesus with a piece of cake in my hand. Like it just, I craved it so much. And to not have sugar cravings anymore, I don't even think about it. And I never thought I would be that person. And so it's so much fun to watch other people who have struggled through dieting and trying to lose weight and lower their A1C for years and years and years, all of a sudden gain control in 2 weeks because they've eliminated those microbes that are causing, you know, these intense cravings. So, well, this has been fantastic. So I just want to end and ask you, what is one of your favorite things to focus on when you are in your bleed week to get you through that?
I would say resting, you know, just being really mindful of, we don't have the support of our hormones like estrogen, progesterone to kind of give us that get up and go, you know, really trying to, if you can. So just as an example, like the last cycle I was on, I had a lot, we were working on a pretty big grant application at work and I was like trying to work on it. I just felt like I wasn't getting where I was like, you know what, I'm going to work on this next week. You know, like this is not the level of thinking I'm ready to do right now. So really just leaning into that and knowing with the rest, more gentle exercises. Another thing I really like to do, organ meats that week. So some raw liver even, or make it definitely some like desiccated organ complex capsules to replenish the iron that you're losing. Bone broth can be helpful as long as the gut's healthy. I mean, I've learned recently that like a lot of people aren't ready for bone broth if the gut's impaired, and something like a meat stock can be better for that.
Interesting. Group. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So bone broth is real high in histamine and it actually can be, it can exacerbate like people who have anxiety and depression that stem from gut dysbiosis actually don't really do well on bone broth. So something like a meat stock can be better, chicken stock. So yeah, that's just some of the things I do, just really trying to like sleep in. I'm not getting up at 5 and exercising or 5:30 like I would other days and trying to get it in at the end of the day or going for longer walks. That can be really helpful.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, big takeaways, track your cycle. And sometimes it can take a full year because we're changing. And then, you know, also understanding once you get into that perimenopausal age group, that there will be some changes. But if you can have a basic understanding of your cycle, then you can start to plan your life around it as much as possible, or at the very least, have an understanding, have those conversations with your spouse, have some things put in place to help support your overall hormonal function, it's going to make a big difference. And so this is something that we will continue to talk about on this podcast, because we're really just starting to explore this when you look at health and functional medicine. I just think that the information that's coming out, it's going to increase exponentially over the next 10 years or so. So definitely stay tuned. But tracking your cycle is really the first step to living your absolute best life as a woman. And if you're married to a woman,
benefit. Not to harp on this, but like really considering stop using hormonal birth control. Mm-hmm. It's really not good for us as women. And,
And like she said, there are so many other options that have the same effective, percentage rate, right? Like, so birth control is 99% effective, hormonal birth control, but what the thermometers that you have.
The company I use their Daisy, but they've got something called the Pearly, the Lady Comp. The Lady Comp is actually like what I would get if I was going to get one now. It's expensive though. It's close to like $500, but it tracks temperature, it tracks your cycle, your cycle length, your average cycle days, your average phase of each cycle, and just gives you a lot of information. There's a lot of apps. Like I use Period Tracker. I like that one. It kind of, you can look back on your average cycle length for the last 2 years, I think. Flow is another one. Just Google in your app, you know, in your phone. There's a lot of companies now that have the thermometer, basal thermometers, basal body temp. So,
and going off of that can be just as effective, hormonal birth control,
as much or even more. Yeah. And like just tracking cervical mucus, like paying attention to, that cervical discharge in your panties. And as soon as you start to see it, you know, you're probably fertile. And the more you get and the more clear it is, the more fertile you are. And that for a lot of women can be a really great. One of my friends, actually, that's like all she does is track cervical fluid, and she's gotten pregnant when she wanted to and not getting pregnant when she doesn't want to.
So, yeah. It's like anything else in health. It's not as convenient as a pill, but neither is being sick. You know, being the ramifications from extended use of birth control, I mean, we're just seeing that it's getting worse and worse. So it's going to take some work, some research, some education on your part, but in the long run, like anything else with health, it's so worth it. So, thanks so much for coming back. And I know that I would love to have you over and over again, because there's so many topics that we want to cover with you.
Will say too, if listeners are interested in more like the gut microbiome stuff, I did record, 2 podcasts this summer with other people on like gut health and mental health. And if you go to my Instagram, which is just at Dr. Catherine Mooring, DrCatherineMooring, they're linked in my bio and you can find them there, or probably just search Apple products for my name. But those are just 2 more really in-depth podcasts that are specifically just about the gut microbiome, and got a lot of posts about it. I'm working on a course. But I think the more we can understand what's happening in our gut. I mean, 10 years ago, we didn't know we had bacteria in our gut. Now we realize there's more bacteria cells than human cells in our body. And I think for some people, that's really hard to wrap our minds around. But, you know, for those of us that are like entrenched in it, it's fascinating. And it's really helping us be able to help people more, understanding that the food really impacts that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. We are going to put her information in the show notes, and definitely go follow her on Instagram. She has a wealth of knowledge. I learn every time. I said this last time, but I do. I love going through your stories and looking at your posts, because I learn every time. Where else can listeners find you?
Yeah. So I'm mostly on Instagram. I do have a Facebook page, Dr. Catherine Mooring, my website, just catherinemooring.com. Kind of have my whole history, my story there, my coaching. I am on LinkedIn. Where else am I? A little bit on TikTok, although not really active on TikTok. You know, it's funny. I didn't just love social media. And then I started this Instagram account back in February, because I was just felt like the timing was right and ready to kind of really formally launch my private practice more than I had in the past. And it's been so much fun to build that community and share and just build relationships with like-minded people. And people are curious. Like I always love when I'll post like a question box and the questions I get, you know, and it's a real fun way to teach and to connect to people. So
Yeah. So if you heard anything today that you want her to go in deeper on, go follow her on Instagram and send her a DM or, you know, pay attention to her story. She's always asking for questions and she'll get back to you. And you'll learn a lot. So that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So until next time, that's going to wrap it up today. If you enjoyed this, make sure that you subscribe. If you want to rate and review, we would love that too. And otherwise, y'all be well. Thank you so much for listening today. We hope that you got a lot out of that episode. We have some more powerful episodes coming up. If you are interested in locking arms with us to get this information out and empowering women to get their health back, it really helps us if you will subscribe to this channel, as well as rating and reviewing the show. If you're interested in talking one-on-one about your personal health journey, I'm happy to do that too. You can find me on Instagram at Allison Health Coach Noe. I will put that in the show notes, as well as my email address, wholestoryhealth@gmail.com. You guys have a great day. We will see y'all next time. That's a wrap for this one.